Welcome to On Air with the Mountain Lion Foundation, broadcasting research and policy discussions to understand the issues that face the American lion.
Hello, you are listening to On Air with the Mountain Lion Foundation. I'm Julie West, your host. My guest today is Phil Carter, Wildlife Campaign Manager with Animal Protection of New Mexico, a nonprofit organization that has been advocating the rights of animals since 1979. APNM tirelessly works to reverse the outmoded view that cougars are nuisance animals that should be eradicated, and it aims to counter these prejudices with a biocentric approach accomplished through education, outreach, and campaigns for the protection of and coexistence with wild species in New Mexico. Phil coordinates campaigns on behalf of the organization and initiates collaborations with state officials and the general public to produce progressive change in New Mexico cougar management. To this end, he networks and communicates with landowners, other nonprofit organizations, New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, New Mexico Environment Department, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, New Mexico State Parks, tribes, and other agencies about human-animal conflicts and benefits. So welcome, Phil. Hello.
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
Yes. Now, I understand that New Mexico is considered to be a premier site for cougar populations. So what are the variables that make it so, and what significance does this hold for their survival?
Well, New Mexico certainly has a fairly robust population of mountain lions. They were never really hunted out here in this state, and so there's always been kind of a background, you know, population. You know, again, you know, the mountain terrain, relatively low population of the state, there's only about 2 million New Mexicans, means there's a lot of open space where these cougars can, you know, live and thrive.
Okay, so then what are the issues at stake for the cougar in New Mexico?
Well, certainly, you know, my organization, Animal Protection in New Mexico, has been working with the State Wildlife Agency, which is New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, for, you know, coming up on, you know, 15 years now, really kind of working with them to manage these cougars better and more scientifically. And so, you know, we had a lot of really progressive changes in management in the last decade, around 2005, 2006, which included development of a really thorough, complex habitat map, which is something that the department never had. But in coordination with our organization, we were able to produce something to really better, you know, manage the cougar populations in each what they call game management unit around the state, of which there are, you know, dozens. Also, a change that we helped the Game and Fish work on in cougar management was the institution of what's called the total sustainable mortality limit for cougar management. Now, what this does is it monitors total mortality of cougars, not just from harvest, which cougars are legal to hunt here in New Mexico, but also any sort of deaths of cougars from roadkill, depredation, or other natural causes. And so it really gives a much more clear picture about, you know, how many cougars of the, you know, this small population here in New Mexico are dying off, and when do game management units need to be closed, or when does hunting need to be limited to make sure we have a, you know, robust and sustainable population of the cats.
What are the numbers that reflect that total sustainable mortality rate?
Well, basically, New Mexico was the site of an extremely thorough study called, it was published as Desert Puma by Drs. Logan and Drs. Sweener, Ken Logan and Dr. Sweener, who both work for Colorado Fish and Wildlife Department. And so the numbers that they came up with from a 10-year study that was paid for by New Mexico taxpayers to the tune of about $1 million, you know, the conservative estimates of total populations of cougars are around 2,041 to 3,043, so between 2,000 and 3,000 here in New Mexico. And again, this is really just a premier cougar population study. I mean, I don't know of anything that's more thorough in any that's been done in any other state.
Your organization uses the Hornocker study.
Yes, definitely. It's the opinion of, you know, a lot of us in the environmental community that ever since the Hornocker study was published in around 2000-2001, the Game and Fish Department here in New Mexico has been doing kind of a concerted effort to downplay its findings, and which is disappointing as it was a taxpayer-funded study and it is such a great resource for wildlife managers here.
So the Hornocker study suggested that the population numbers were hovering right around 3,043, and what do the total sustainable mortality figures reflect in relation to that number?
It varies by, game management units here in New Mexico, and so, I don't know of any game management unit under the more, conservative estimates by the Hornocker study that, are over 400 cougars. And again, that's on the high end. And I should really just back up and say it's really 2,000 to 3,000 are the conservative estimates of the total population here in New Mexico. Now, asking Game and Fish Department starting in, their biologists starting in 2010, they went to the extreme high end of what the Hornocker study prescribed and decided that they were going to consider total cougar population here in the state as between 3,000 and 4,200. And so that was kind of the first indication that, that my organization and others really felt like, something's not quite right about how such a drastic change in management in just one year.
So how did those numbers then influence the hunting quotas on cougars?
Well, in July 2010, the Game and Fish Department issued its recommendations for the next round of what's called the Bear and Cougar Rule here in New Mexico. This is what dictates management of both black bears and mountain lions here. And where it was an annual quota, which is basically the hunting quota, how many cougars can be sustainably managed and hunted per year, where it was in 2009 at 490 cougars per year, it got bumped up just in the span of one year to 1,190. Those were the new recommendations issued in July 2010 by Game and Fish Department. There was also a huge increase of the female sublimit, which is basically the quota for hunting female cougars. Where it was 126, it became 386.
Right, that was approximately a 200% increase in their sub quota. And considering that females are considered to be the biological bank account, so to speak, of the population, they should require special care. Is it reasonable to suggest that these quotas could potentially eradicate the population?
Certainly, me and my colleagues in the environmental community made those, suggestions heavily when those, recommendations were released in July 2010. Through kind of our efforts at working with state government, including the governor's office, as well as mobilizing the public who is concerned about such a drastic increase, Game and Fish Department came back in September 2010, or actually it was late August 2010, with a new number, which is 996 cougars per year.
So it had been 409. They proposed over 1,110, and then there was a public outcry that reduced that number to whatever you said, 900 and some. And what is the current quota in 2012?
The current quota, because, that new number, 996, didn't satisfy me and my colleagues in the environmental community either. And the reason for that being is, a number of reasons. What the Game and Fish Department was using, in our opinion, was essentially replacing the Hornocker study with was what was called the Perry study. Now, what this was a one-year study that was conducted as a master's thesis here in New Mexico. It was a population survey on one small area. And at the time that the Game and Fish Department was citing it as the main source of their population assumptions for cougars in New Mexico, it had not been published, nor had it even been peer-reviewed. It was only submitted as a master's thesis. That kind of, really set off some red flags amongst me and my colleagues. And so we went to, we filed what is basically the state version of a Freedom of Information Act request here in New Mexico, which all state agencies are required to comply with within 2 weeks. And one of our requests was, can we see a copy of this Perry study? Because as it wasn't published or even,
right,
you know, mentioned in any scientific journal, we couldn't get a copy of it. So, so 2 weeks later, I go get contacted by Game and Fish to come, you know, pick up the documents. And lo and behold, the Game and Fish Department office claimed they didn't even have a copy of this study. So what they were essentially using as the basis, the, you know, a major basis of their population assumptions for cougars, they claim not even to have a copy of it within their office.
How does something like that get through the cracks? You would think that they would be working very closely with wildlife biologists to get the latest numbers in order to, you know, better reflect policy. How did something
right
like that happen? What was the reasoning?
Well, unfortunately, you know, New Mexico's state law is not like federal law, where, you know, for the Endangered Species Act, you're required to use what's called best available science. But New Mexico has no such provision like that. So really, the wildlife biologists in the employ of the state are kind of free to set their own determination of best available science. And so ultimately, they decided to largely base, you know, their population figures on, you know, what we considered a highly questionable study, which, I mean, that's not to downplay the value of the study itself. We later had to get a copy of it from Dr. Perry himself because the state didn't have a copy of it. But, you know, to base, you know, something as important as cougar population figures on a, you know, one-year study that had not received any peer review nor was even published was what we considered highly questionable.
So if wildlife biologists themselves were, in a sense, advocating for this document or using it as their baseline, it sounds like there must be some division within the wildlife biology community itself. And do the biologists sit down, convene at a table with everybody and hash these discrepancies out? Was there any kind of a meeting to really look closely at these figures?
I assume that the department's biologists had met amongst themselves and decided to, you know, to use this particular study as well as a few others to make these determinations, but certainly my organization nor any of my fellow environmental organizations were not invited to the table that time.
So it's encouraging then that the public actually lobbied on behalf of the mountain lion,
no,
and in essence were responsible for the lowering of that initial number.
Yeah,
what do
I
you
mean,
account for the what do you account for the public's support of the mountain lion in New Mexico?
I think, you know, organizing you know, on our part, both APNM and other organizations, and the, you know, the fact that it was a kind of a shock to a lot of people to have essentially a 200% increase originally, I think really galvanized a lot of public opposition. And
especially
and it's
if you take the high end, even if you were to take the 4,200 end of the Hornocker study or 3,000, that 1,000 figure is outrageous.
Right. Well, it's, I mean, it's essentially their they were claiming, you know, a quarter, you know, more cougars than what we considered, you know, under the precautionary principle of, you know, this has always been a relatively rare species and management really needs to reflect that. And it's, you know, as you mentioned, ultimately in October 2010, at the final vote, the Game and Fish Department lowered the total quota further to about 742 cougars total. But there's this kind of pervasive sense of arbitrariness to all these numbers because, really, even under the original 490 number, hunters rarely got over 200 cougars per year. And so just the fact of, you know, trying to so outrageous, well, what we considered outrageous increases on this when even under the original quota, hunters were getting less than half of it per year was just really, you know, almost kind of surreal to watch play out like that.
So there's an inflation between the actual the actual harvest quota and the total projected quota.
Right. No, it's very strange to watch play out, just because, you know, the game and fish biologists as well as the game commissioners are very aware that, only a percentage of these hunting quotas are being met from year to year.
I see. So maybe can that suggest potentially a lower population than originally thought, if consistently hunters can't even bring in more than 200 a year? Does that
mean
population is perhaps more fragile than we think?
You can certainly make that argument. I mean, you know, there was a number of, you know, new developments in cougar management, this past spring, certainly, that, in issuing them, Game and Fish Department has kind of stuck to its guns and claiming that, you know, these pretty, what we would consider drastic changes in cougar management are necessary because they're, in their quote, there are too many mountain lions. Now, whether that's the truth is, I don't think, has ever really been adequately proven by them or anyone else.
Well, and studies show that high hunting pressures actually can destabilize a cougar population and contribute to more incidents and issues. Gary Kohler is a wildlife biologist living in Washington who I interviewed previously with Mountain Lion Foundation, who speaks about when you remove the elders from the population, you essentially have these young, unruly juveniles on your hand who are trying to disperse and take over new territory. And so by coming in and overhunting, you're upsetting a very a balance that the animals themselves have helped to create.
Yeah, and I mean, in the 2010 recommendations by Game and Fish Department, there was a section that we found particularly egregious that essentially the agency said it relied on Drs. Logan and Sweeney's research to conclude that exploitation of a cougar population would increase public safety, when that is just not supported in the scientific literature whatsoever.
So you referenced the 2010 modifications that the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish proposed. Where are we now in 2012? What's happened?
Well, this past spring, Game and Fish Department issued some new amendments to the bear and cougar rule that, you know, we were kind of slipped in under the radar, but we can, you know, definitely felt like there's some really drastic changes to cougar management contained within these amendments. The biggest one is that, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we helped Game and Fish Department institute a new management, paradigm called the total sustainable mortality, which, you know, accounts for all cougar deaths within a game management unit, not just hunting. Well, that was pretty much thrown aside during these 2012 amendments, and now cougar harvest, which is, the total cougars killed through hunting, is the only thing that's going to determine, you know, game management zone closures from now on. So they
so
are
if
only
a, if a cougar gets hit on the highway or becomes a natural death, all of those kinds of deaths are not counted?
That's correct. They are no longer counted. They're counted, but they do not affect any sort of management changes. Only hunting is going to determine, you know, what game management zones are closed. So it's essentially, you know, working at a deficit of cougars in the fact that you're not responding to, other forms of mortality to these cougars.
Development and road deaths, I would think, would account for a high percentage of cougar deaths.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, probably around, 80 to 90%, I believe, is what the department has claimed is the cause of mortality is hunting. So about hunting accounts for about 80 to 90% of mortality is what the department claims. I'm not sure about that, but, you know, it really kind of defies any sort of precautionary principle as far as managing a pretty rare species to not include these other forms of mortality like roadkill or natural depredation. And so another really big change that occurred this past spring was where cougar hunting season was limited from October to March. It is now a year-round enterprise. You can go out and hunt cougars at any time during the year. And Also, the bag limits for these hunters has doubled, where you could only take one cougar per hunting trip. Now you can take two.
So what about mating season and when mothers have their children, that there's just disregard for those seasonal changes?
That's what it appears like, that the Game and Fish Department is now completely disregarding cougar biology and mating as far as overall, you know, as far as its scientific management of the species goes.
Who's tracking those changes to see what kind of difference this is already making on habitat?
Well, I mean, these new amendments haven't been in place very long. They were voted in unanimously by the State Game Commission in June at their meeting, and so it kind of remains to be seen what the effects on these populations is going to be. The wildlife biologists employed by the state are responsible for, you know, maintaining these you know, studies of, you know, how it's affecting the cougar populations.
So when the department makes it known that they're going to be considering modifications policy, do you see all kinds of interest groups, I would imagine, lobbying to be heard, from biologists themselves to hunters to individuals such as yourself, or in the public? There are opportunities to come present your information for consideration at some point. How good are they at making those opportunities available and known?
Well, I mean, the amendments are published, you know, on the Game and Fish Department's website and open to a public comment period. Generally, the State Game Commission, you know, holds one public comment period at some location within the state at one meeting, and then at the next meeting they vote yay or nay on the, you know, the changes in management on this, you know. And so they're, you know, both, you know, the environmental groups as well as other groups like the hunting interest groups are out there, generally at odds, though not always. You know, it's kind of always an issue as far as who's going to be heard, who gets their membership out better. I would say that I think we have a game commission that's much more stacked to agricultural interests and hunter interests than we have had in years past. The State Game Commission is a body that's appointed by the governor's office, and it's been traditional to have at least one commissioner from the environmental community sitting on that, but we haven't really had that at all since 2010. Which is, you know, quite disappointing when you look at the, you know, the overall percentages of what people use their public lands here in New Mexico for. You know, the people who get out for, you know, hiking and especially wildlife watching, which is its own designation, far, far outstrip by many orders of magnitude the people who are out for hunting or angling or trapping. If this game commission was truly representative of what the public is using its public lands for and public wildlife for, they should have a mostly environmentalist, you know, panel makeup, but they very much do not.
Let's back up a minute, because, you know, you were talking about the public outcry, and I know that one component of what Animal Protection of New Mexico does is something called Cougar Smart New Mexico. Mm-hmm. It's an outreach program you've developed in collaboration with the Santa Fe County Open Space and Trails, but also some of the entities mentioned in our introduction, the New Mexico State Parks and so on. So tell me about this outreach program, and what are some of the kinds of things that it undertakes?
Well, I mean, because, you know, public safety is often used as kind of an rationale for, you know, managing or even over-managing of cougars to the point of exportation. We developed this program called Cougar Smart, which has a number of materials that are distributed for free, and we also give outreach talks, and especially to families and children all over the state. What it is basically information on safe and responsible conduct within cougar country. So really tidbits about, you know, if you see a cougar, you know, what's the safe course of action? Don't run, look big, certainly don't play dead, make a lot of noise. And also other, you know, really helpful tips like always keep your dog leashed when out in, cougar country, including national forest land, walk in groups, make sure children stay near adults, things like that, just to make sure that, people stay safe and we don't have, while attacks are extremely rare, they do happen. We had a number, actually two fairly high-profile cougar attacks back in 2008. And so just to really to be proactive in making sure people stay safe so these animals aren't persecuted on behalf of a misguided approach toward public safety.
Are there any guidelines available for ranchers or those with livestock?
Well, we don't publish those. A number of other groups do, including, I believe, Defenders of Wildlife does. I want to say Mountain Lion Foundation has also produced materials on that, though I could be wrong. I mean, the total number of livestock losses, from native carnivores, including mountain lions, but also wolves and coyotes, is, extremely small. And that's, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's own figures show that. And so, we're always trying to downplay the actual danger to, both humans and livestock from these animals when, far more head of livestock are lost to, exposure, dehydration, even lightning strikes per year.
Right. And cougars and other large predators can actually benefit prey populations, can't they?
Absolutely. Definitely keeping, these deer and elk and other ungulate populations, in check, culling the weak, and, through the trophic systems of biology, keeping, deer and other populations in check benefits other animals, including, beaver, foxes, rodents, all sorts of creatures. And so, the mountain lions really do have a very vital place within the ecosystem. And so it's disappointing to see, when wildlife management seems to think they're an inexhaustible resource.
Right. And so what's the state of cougar research like today? Are there a healthy number of potential next generation of cougar biologists who are interested in working with your organization and who are helping to keep the figures current, the data current?
Right. I mean, we're always looking to, collaborate with, people who are really, interested in, working on cougar biology and all that. I mean, I don't foresee it. We're kind of in a different political climate than we were back in the mid to late 90s when this Hornocker study was done at taxpayer money. I don't see something like that happening again, but, we're definitely coordinate with a number of biologists and, always welcome, real good hard data on just what the mountain lion populations and the state of their well-being is.
And what do the habitat maps reveal now? Where are the healthy populations located in the state?
They're all over. I mean, New Mexico has kind of a band of the Rocky Mountains going down through through the central part of it, and so that's where we're seeing a lot of the populations, though there are kind of more isolated clusters as well in the southeast and northwest sections of the state as well.
Okay, and so tell me what some of the current projects are on the table for you and your peers there.
Certainly, we're continuing to get the word out about the Cougar Smart program to school groups. I've had a lot of, interaction with over the past year with groups like the Valles Caldera National Preserve. They had their annual marathon back in June, and every year they have an animal theme for it, and this year was Year of the Cougar. So it was really fun to coordinate with the Valles Caldera Preserve on getting information out and as well as distributing the Cougar Smart materials. Also had a lot of good interaction with the State Girl Scout Association here. It's been great working with them. They have a number of really interesting, badges, their projects that their scouts do related to wildlife management. So it's been really fun working with some of the, young, what I would consider potential activists, but certainly young kids really looking to learn more about the issue.
Absolutely.
We've recently manufactured some middle versions of our Cougar Smart, you know, informational signs that State Parks has been getting up at a number of locations around the state, which has been a great development too. And, you know, we've been talking with, you know, Fish or Forest Service for, you know, a couple of years now about possibly adapting this Cougar Smart program to a national campaign similar to their Be Bear Aware program.
Nice. Are there other advocacy groups in other states that your group partners with or looks to as a role model or for example in how to implement new strategies?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, Mountain Lion Foundation has always been quite supportive, as has the Cougar Fund. We continue to work with the Hornocker Institute, as well as the biologist Sharon Negri, just about, you know, really getting responsible management of cougars, not just in New Mexico, but across the West.
Can you conclude with a cougar story of your own? Have you ever seen a cougar in the wild?
No, I never have, personally. It's kind of an ongoing dream. My parents live up in southern Colorado in the San Luis Valley, and they saw a mountain lion probably about 500 yards from their house recently, so I was really jealous for that. I've definitely heard them when I've been out camping, and you know, but as of yet, I've not seen them. It's kind of an ongoing hope that I will someday.
They're elusive creatures, aren't
mm-hmm.
they?
Very.
Well, Phil Carter, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Great. I really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
And good luck with your next wave of projects. You've been listening to Phil Carter, Wildlife Campaign Manager with Animal Protection of New Mexico. I'm Julie West with the Mountain Lion Foundation. Thank you.
This has been a Mountain Lion Foundation On Air broadcast. On Air is a copyrighted production of the Mountain Lion Foundation. Permission to rebroadcast is granted for non-commercial use. For more information, visit mountainlion.org.